The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek and they met it with a bat. Fuck them protesting them sit-ins. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursuit. One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines known as USA Inc. Today's date is November the 2nd, 2015. It is a Monday afternoon here in the state of North Carolina where I'm broadcasting from. It's good to be back on the airwaves, although I came back on air last night with Political Prisoner Radio, but it's good to be back on my regular weekly program, Black Talk Radio News. I needed the rest. I am recharged and, you know, I'm just ready to go. I tell you, man, I was really wanting to cut my vacation short. There was so much going on and people contacting me and asking me about this and asking me about that, but I just needed to take a break for about a week and just recharge the batteries and whatnot. Again, welcome to Black Talk Radio News. This program is about an hour or so of news, information, and commentary. Today we will be discussing something that many of the listeners have contacted me about, and that is the Spring Valley High School terrorist attack on the black female student, at that school that occurred in South Carolina. So that is mainly what I will be discussing with you here today. We do have a couple of guest speakers coming on to speak with us about this terrible issue of police violence, really against people in general, but specifically against non-white people. And from my research yesterday, I found out that police violence against children, it happens more than what you may think. I mean, it happens a lot. I was reading stories about little 8-year-old children being tased by police. And so, I mean, this is a serious issue. And it's not like, you know, this is anything new. But what the problem is we haven't come up with a proper response. And I hope that moving forward for the sake of future generations, that we could get a handle on this problem and eliminate all of this police terrorism, which, of course, is only an extension of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. And with that said, joining me today, one of the guest speakers will be Mr. Max Parthas. He is no stranger to the people who listen to Black Talk Radio Network's digital radio station, as he is the co-host and co-producer of New Abolitionist Movement, which will be back on air Wednesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. But Max is part of the New Abolitionist Movement. He's an activist, and I guess we should call him actionist, like he refers to Yohanan, because Max is always out there in them streets taking action. And Max invited, and I appreciate him inviting another actionist from South Carolina who will be joining us today. And I hope I pronounce her name correctly, but that is, Sister Indaya X. Asada from the Black Counselors for Justice Group. From what Max has told me, she is the one, or that group is the one that organized the demonstration that took place at the Sheriff's Department in the county where this terrorist attack happened to, the young black female. So we are looking forward today to having a discussion, with both of them. And of course, you, the listener, if you have any comments, if you have any questions, you certainly can give me a call. Let me give out the telephone numbers. The conference line number is 641-715-3660. The extension is 549-032 pound. Again, that's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Greetings to those already dialed in. Anytime you want to make a comment or ask a question, hit *6 and 1. Of course, you can also call in from anywhere in the world as long as you have internet access, which obviously you would have that if you're listening to this program, but you need a pair of headsets to use the web-based flash phone, and you can make a free call from anywhere in the world using that flash phone. Just click on the icon on the broadcast page that says call the show. Now, before I bring on our guest speakers to have a conversation about this very important ongoing issue with our children behind the enemy lines of USA, Inc., just a couple of news items I want to share with you. I may not have time to get to them all, but I have linked to a couple of the stories that caught my eye today. Actor Jamie Foxx told film director Quentin Tarantino to keep speaking truth in relation to police terrorism in the United States. Several police unions have called for a boycott of Tarantino's new film because he participated in a NYC rally against police brutality. So, you know, they're a bunch of little brats and children, and you know, they really aren't employed to defend Quentin Tarantino's First Amendment right to freedom of speech, or anybody else's right for that matter. No, they are slave catchers. That's what they do 99% of the time. And so this is just evident, you know, that these people do not view themselves as public servants, even though the public is the one that's paying their salaries. They think that they can just say whatever they want to say, act however they want to act, you know, when somebody exercises their rights, you know. So that's a story that I think is important, because we have Jamie Foxx is a showcase black actor, and Quentin Tarantino is a high profile film director. While he may be a suspected racist, still it's good whenever we can get anybody, you know, to speak out against police terrorism and to speak about matters of justice truthfully. All right. Also, another thing that caught my eye, we may discuss this more in depth on New Abolitionist Radio. But of course, you know, that's up to Max and Johannan as they put together whatever we'll be speaking on. But presidential candidate Bernie Sanders called for cannabis to be removed from the DEA's scheduled list of dangerous drugs. Bernie Sanders said, "We must recognize that blacks are 4 times more likely than whites to get arrested for marijuana possession, even though the same proportion of blacks and whites use marijuana." I don't like saying marijuana. I prefer cannabis because of the racist roots of that word. Anyway, any serious criminal justice reform must include removing cannabis from the Controlled Substances Act. So that's Bernie Sanders calling out Hillary Clinton and saying if she's serious about criminal justice reform, it has to include that. And that is something that President Obama has given hints as to something that he wanted to do, but he was getting pushback from the former DEA head Michelle Lionheart, who was forced to resign earlier this year when she couldn't explain why DEA CIA agents were down there in Colombia having sex parties that were paid for by drug cartels. So those are some stories that caught my eye today. And one other that I did not list, the hackers group Anonymous had promised last week that they were going to hack the database of Ku Klux Klan's groups and expose it, their members. Now, I just saw the headline. I didn't read the story. I didn't have time to read the story, but it appears that they have exposed a, I don't know if it was a state senator or a U.S. senator, but they have exposed some politician as having membership in the Klan. So those are some of the stories that we may be able to get to after we speak with our guest today about the very serious issue of police terrorism against our children. I believe we have both of our guests on the line. Let me see. Max, do I have you?
Peace, Brother Scotty. Max is here.
Peace, Max. Thank you for joining me today. And sister, am I pronouncing your name correctly, Sister Indaya?
Peace and Black Power. It's actually India Asada.
India, Sister India Asada. All right. Thank you for joining me on such short notice. Cause I know, I was speaking to Max earlier and, I thought I had woke him up. I'm like, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but you know, Max told me that, you know, he had been up all night and I am aware of the activities that y'all have been involved in that community and, providing support to the victim of this terrorist. What is that guy's name? Ben Fields, the former school resource officer that has been, fired from his job, but I think he should be charged with, the crime of assault, assaulting his child. But, most of our listening audience, cause Max is a host and producer on Black Talk Radio Network and they pretty much know him. But, Sister India, if you wouldn't mind, if you could just give us a brief bio, tell us a little bit about what the Black Counselors for Justice group is about.
The Black Counselors for Justice is a newly formed coalition of mental health professionals, counselors, therapists, case managers, holistic healers, and spiritual advisors that are advocating for, to be present in the school system in regards to advocating, doing trauma-informed care training, positive youth development, conflict resolution, mediation, as well as providing ongoing case management and support for our youth from a culturally competent perspective. We're also working across the nation to provide services for victims of police terrorism and issues pertaining to systemic racism. Outside of the Black Counselors for Justice, I'm also in coalition with many other groups, including South Carolina RBG, as well as I'm one of the co-chairs for the National Blackout, as we're planning a national boycott for Black Friday weekend into Christmas.
Oh, most certainly. We definitely want to support that. You know, people have been calling for a boycott of Christmas for a very long time, but for some reason, I think that we may get more participation this year than what we have in the past. It seems like the issue is being more widely discussed than it has been in the past. So I appreciate you bringing that up and your work towards that endeavor. But let's talk about the terrorist attack on this student. I do know what her first name is, but I don't want to share her name, period. Okay, because I know how easy it is for people to track down people, you know, if they have any personal information. So I don't want to share that on this program. We'll just refer to her as the victim of Ben Fields. Max.
Yes, sir.
Max. Describe to me, man, the scene that you described. Describe to the listeners the scene that you described on Facebook about the theme music y'all was using when y'all rolled up on for this demonstration at the Sheriff's Department.
Well, we decided after the rally at the State House to go down to the Sheriff's office, and Sister India was in contact with the mother and the young woman who videotaped the entire encounter. and they were going to meet us there. So we went over there, and when we got there with our signs and all of this, one of the brothers, I believe, was Stephen, that took out a bullhorn, opened up FTP, F the Police by NWA, and started playing it on the bullhorn right there in front of the police station. It's a pretty awesome thing to see, especially on Halloween, trick or treat, biatches, you know? But, it let them know that we were serious about what we were there for. And I would like to give some shout outs to the groups that organized this, the other groups. Of course, SCRBGs, Black Counselors for Justice, Malcolm X Center for Self-Determination, the Ubuntu Institute for Community Development, which is also an abolitionist organization, Black Educators for Justice, the Harriet Tubman Freedom House, and the Black Lawyers for Justice. All of those groups were there in attendance to make this happen, as well as bringing a list of demands for change that they posted right on the police, the sheriff's department's door right there. And I think they went in afterwards. I didn't actually go into the police station with them. By the time that occurred, I had to leave. I had another event that I had to go to, which was 2 hours away. But I guess Sister India could tell you what happened once they got inside.
Yes, I want to hear about that. And Sister, if you could share some of the list of demands that y'all made on the police. But first, let me say this. I want to thank you both and all those groups that Max just mentioned for showing out and for turning out in unity in support of this victim of Ben Fields, because I, you know, had people I'm connected to through social media. I even got a voicemail left on my phone today asking, is anybody, you know, turning out and supporting this group? You know, I was asked about the NAACP, which I noticed you didn't mention mention them. But I'm not on here to bash the NAACP, but they were just asking me, is anybody standing up for them? And I had, and this was like days ago, and I said, well, I can't speak to that, but I do know a member of the New Abolitionist Movement is on the ground, there. And of course, I'm speaking of yours truly, Max Parthas. And so I just want to thank, you all, because for some people standing on the outside, they were thinking that there was no support, you know, for this child. Of course, the mainstream media and racist suspect media was quick to blast those misguided children's protests on behalf of Ben Fields to get him his job back. But this protest, this demonstration that you all held has, of course, not made it onto mainstream media, or it's not being promoted like the demonstration that the misguided students held. So thank you all for that. Sister India, will you please, if you don't mind, sharing what occurred once you all went into the police station, and I mean the sheriff's station, and what were some of the list of demands?
We actually did not enter into the police department. We actually planned on doing so, but upon the arrival of the young Shiro, as we like to call her, Naya Kenny, who was the one who recorded the event, as well as who has been speaking out on behalf of the young lady who was assaulted, she and her mother came and joined us. And so we wanted to be respectful, because that young lady has several charges being pressed against her, criminal charges, merely for speaking out. And so we tried to kind of honor those wishes so that we didn't do anything that would affect her criminal case negatively.
Understood.
Some of the demands that we listed and we taped to the door of the sheriff's department, I'm just going to go ahead and read them. We demand that the criminal Ben Fields be arrested and charged and punished in accordance with the malicious crime he committed. We demand dismissal of all charges against the victim and her classmate, material witness Naya Kenny. We're echoing the Honorable Jim Clyburn's query. We ask why are school resource officers being utilized and enforced discipline in the classroom? In this tragedy, we as a community have come together and demand more protection of the hearts, minds, and bodies of our youth, and we'd like to prepare them to protect each other, the world that only sees them as problems and criminals. We demand that student resource officers be removed out of the classrooms in Richland County and the state of South Carolina and as a nation as a whole. We demand cops out of the classroom and counselors in the classroom. And so those were the demands that were pertaining directly to the Sheriff's Department. And we have a list of other demands that we are pursuing with the school administrative staff, which is that the teacher, the principal, and the administrator that allowed this travesty to happen be fired as well, and that until they remove student resource officers out of the classroom, that they be mandated to receive specialized training in cultural diversity, positive youth development, trauma-informed care, as well as mediation and conflict resolution solutions pertaining to our youth.
Now, when this first occurred, this terrorist attack occurred on the victim, the young lady, who I agree with you is a shero, and I'm going to explain why. But, you know, we were lacking a lot of information, and a lot of people were jumping to conclusions. And then I felt like, you know, it grew into where it really wasn't about this one incident. It became about disrespecting our youth and promoting stereotypes that all of our youth are out of control and don't know how to behave and whatnot. And that she, you know, wouldn't refuse to get off the phone or refuse to text. And so a lot, it was just a whole lot of speculation going on, and that speculation continues. Now, I was able to come across some information last night. I have linked to a article that is on LATimes.com where our young female shero was stating that she was protesting unfair treatment, and that is why she refused to get out of her chair. And so I was, you know, also discussing this with my family members and whatnot, and I was like, you know, I look at this as a sit-in, that she was protesting unfair treatment, and some alternative media outlets, and yeah, maybe a couple of mainstream media outlets, have pointed out the disparities in school suspensions and school discipline of black children. Of course, as you know, one of the hosts and a member of the new abolitionist movement, I mean, I'm reminded of the stories. Was that out of Mississippi, Max, where for minor infractions, they were shipping those kids off straight to the youth detention facility? And some of the cops even said they were running a taxi service from the school to the youth prison.
Yes, they were being sued, and they settled, as a matter of fact, out of Mississippi. That's one of two major incidents. The other one was Pennsylvania in the Kids for Cash scandal, where the judges there were literally getting kickbacks for sending children, school children just like her, into the privately owned juvenile detention facility, Pennsylvania Child Care. And they ended up getting 28 years in prison for that. And they were making $2 million a year in kickbacks. And I think we did the math on it and found out that that company made $1 billion on those incarcerated children, nearly 5,000 of them. And the finale of that story was the company itself ended up paying a $50 million fine. So they made $1 billion, paid $50 million in fine, and nobody was ever charged in that organization or corporation.
And so I view her again, you know, and they are trying to sweep this under the rug, or maybe they are not even looking at it like that. But she stated that she felt like it was unfair to kick her out the classroom when she put the phone away when asked. Is that similar information that you have, Sister India?
Yes, that is the story that we have. Again, I have to be very careful on what information that I do disclose.
I understand.
Both young ladies are under legal counsel. But yes, that information is definitely consistent with what we have heard, not only from the young lady that we've been in contact with, but from other classmates. We spent some time at Spring Valley this week, and we've talked to several of the classmates and students that were around, even pertaining to the boycott that happened last week. It is our understanding that those students, there was a small group, a very small group of students that were in support of Officer Slam, and the children refer to him as, because he's known for brutalizing the children. They call him Officer Slam. And And there was only a few that were in support of him, primarily the athletes and cheerleaders, as he was the strength and conditioning trainer for the sports team. So it is our understanding that the administration actually coaxed them to participate in a walkout. They were already planning a walkout in support of the two young ladies who they referred to as the Spring Valley Two. And so they were already tweeting and handing out flyers about a walkout that they were planning actually for today. And so on Friday when they were in school, there was allegedly an announcement made across the loudspeaker by the school administration stating that anyone who wanted to participate in the walkout could go ahead and walk out into the courtyard for 15 minutes without being disciplined. So according to the young people that we spoke to, majority of these young people went ahead and took advantage of that opportunity to protest, and they walked out. Once they got outside of the school, they realized that they had been surprised, they had been hoodwinked, if you will, because there was news media outlets already waiting there, and a small group of students with T-shirts that said, bring back Officer Fields, bring back Ben Fields. So the majority of those youth that were actually out there protesting were in fact there to support the two young ladies and not the officers. Of course, mainstream media would manipulate the situation to show a different narrative.
Thank you for sharing that information. That's why I put estimated 100 students, because that's the only information I had access to. So thank you for that very important clarification. Now, I had listed in my program description, you know, some facts, what I felt like were facts. If they're not facts, then please correct me. But the first fact I've already shared with you, that the victim was protesting unfair treatment, which I would call a nonviolent sit-in. And that does speak to the larger issue of how black children, non-white children, are disproportionately disciplined in school. And oftentimes that discipline is harsher than what a member of another, you know, member of a different racial classification would face if they did the same thing. Now, I did hear reports on social media. People were saying that they heard that the teachers may have been behind pushing these students out to protest to bring back Officer Slam, as you called him, Ben Fields, the former police terrorist. This is what I wrote as another fact. The estimated 100 students, and I understand you're saying now that the majority of those students were not out there in support of him. That was really just a small amount that the students felt like they were hoodwinked. But this is what I wrote. The estimated 100 students who walked out of class disrupting school, protesting the firing of Ben Fields, were not suspended from school, unlike the victim and the second female victim who verbally protested the brutal treatment of her classmate, who was suspended for quote unquote disrupting class. The students protesting on Fields' behalf were not physically assaulted and suffered no injuries despite breaking school rules. Now, of course, I'm not saying they should have been suspended. I'm not saying that they should be treated similarly to the other two victims, the young female student who was assaulted and the one who came to her defense through verbal protests. But I just think that that points to the hypocrisy. And so now what I'm hearing from you is that the administration might have even been down with it, you know, of this disruption of school. I don't care if it was approved or they gave them permission or what. It was still a disruption, you know. So any one of you would like to comment?
Yeah. Well, there's some things that it really have got my mind whirling for the past week. The protests by a few, as you said, a few of the students in favor of Officer Fields really blew my mind. The fact that there was even a protest for such a thing, it just shows that our kids are being indoctrinated from a very early stage. And also, I would like to point out that this whole case right here can be judged just on the video alone.
Right.
We don't really need to know about anybody else's history. We saw it with our own eyes unfold, and we could see that there was no justification for what was done to that young girl. So there's a lot of people out there trying to justify it, but there is no justification. And as far as I'm concerned, we don't need any other stories other than what we saw right there. And I also like to point out that that is a perfect example of the school to prison pipeline, as you mentioned earlier. And if you don't mind, Scotty, I would like to just put out some statistical facts about the school to prison pipeline.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
It also includes foster care. And as we found out, the young lady recently lost her mother and her grandmother before that, and now she's in foster care. So foster care is a part of the problem. 50% of the children in the foster care system are Black or Latino. Now, we only make up 13% of the population, but we're half of the foster care system. 30% of foster care youth entering the juvenile justice system are placement-related behavioral cases, like what we saw happen with her. Also, 25% of young people leaving foster care will be incarcerated within a few years after turning 18. Further, this is just still on the foster care, 50% of young people leaving foster care will be unemployed within a few years after turning 18. And here's a big one on foster care. 70% of inmates in California state prison are former foster care youth. 70%. So this foster care system is a problem in itself. And then it goes to the school to prison pipeline, where you got 40% of students expelled from the U.S. school each year are Black. Mm-hmm. So we, again, 13%, but almost half of the expelled students are Black students. And a whopping 70% of students involved in school arrests or referred to law enforcement are Black or Latino. 70%. How the hell is that even possible when you only make up 13%, but 70% of them are being arrested by these school officers? And Black students are 3.5 times more likely to be suspended than whites. So what I'm saying here basically is that she fit all the criteria of oppression, and he fit all the criteria of what oppressors do. This was an attack on a young 16-year-old minor, left her in a cast in the arm, bleeding from the head, and she'll never be the same, ever, for the rest of her life. This will haunt her, and this happens all the time. And here in South Carolina, when they arrest you in those schools and send you to the facility in Columbia called CEC, Community Education Center, it's a privately owned juvenile prison. It's called Camp Aspen is their facility. The South Carolina taxpayers pay $161,000 to incarcerate a young woman like her in that facility for 1 year. That's a bounty on that young girl's head, a freaking bounty. So as far as the prisons are concerned, they want these kids to come into their facility. That's a $160,000 paycheck for them.
Right. I read another article earlier today about, you know, the statistics showing the decrease in the funding of schools in terms of, you know, providing the children with resources, but an increase in these building of prisons. And of course, I don't have to convince you, Max, so you just laid it out. She has a target on her back. They're looking for new slaves. Okay. And Officer Field, or former Officer Field, like I stated at the beginning of the program, 99% of what these cops do is new slave catching. So Sister India, did you have any commentary on what we talked about?
Yes. Bear with me because I'm traveling. A revolutionary work has never done. I'm traveling to my next location. So if you hear a little background noise, please put your listening ears on. But I just wanted to clarify a little bit of what Max was speaking of regarding the school to prison pipeline, and kind of go back to the walkout that happened. And just talk about a little bit about the integrity and reporting that transpired. I know that they listed that there were hundreds or a little over 100. I saw some articles that said hundreds and some that said over 100. There's a young man that was interviewed that was allegedly in support of Ben Fields. I believe he was one of the football players who admitted that there was only approximately 40 or 50 students collectively that participated in that walkout. And like I said, only a small percentage was, in fact, in support of Officer Slam. The other thing I wanted to touch base on is the fact that, yes, this young lady is in foster care. There's conflicting information as to whether she is, in fact, an orphan or not. But really, either one of those things, whether she is, in fact, grieving the loss of her mother and her grandmother, or if she's just a young lady who is in the foster care system or in state custody, there are some fundamental things that are being ignored. Mm-hmm. It's our understanding that this young lady was in a controlled classroom. And so if she was in a controlled classroom where there were other children who had special needs, then that means that this young lady had a 504 plan as well as an individualized education plan. When young people have 504 plans or IEP plans in the school system, there are strategic outlined kind of steps that are supposed to be taken if a young person acts out, and that obviously didn't transpire. And I wanted to kind of echo on the mentality of the youth and even the members of the community that are shaming this victim. We are absolutely disgusted of the level of Stockholm syndrome that is existing in the community and in the state of South Carolina completely, because what they are doing is they're vilifying this young lady merely for not getting up out of her seat. And when you look at it under the pretense as if you were the father and you were coming to respond to your child in school after a teacher and administrator called and said that your child was being ornery or not complying with simple instructions, and you, Max, let's say that this was your daughter, if you would have pulled your daughter out of that desk violently and slammed her to the floor and threw her across the room and broken her arm and done the things and caused her to sustain the type of injuries that this officer caused her to, not only would you have criminal charges, but that child would be removed from your custody. That, in fact, is a blatant show of the disparities systemically as far as the racial implications, as well as the disparities in the education system and like you said, the school-to-prison pipeline. The unfortunate fact about this is that this young lady is in the custody of the state, and so she doesn't have that strong voice of people that are surrounding her, that can advocate for her in the way that another child would. That's why we're advocating so much to get culturally competent counselors and mental health professionals in the schools that really understand the plight of our youth. That's something that absolutely cannot be denied or kind of minimalized here. And that's something that I'm really aghast that we're not seeing any kind of reporting about, that they definitely violated this young lady's civil as well as her special needs, being in a controlled classroom and being a young lady who is in fact in the care of the state. And so the state and the Department of Social Services and Juvenile Services have failed this young lady as well. And we plan to pursue some action against them moving forward as well.
You're absolutely right. That was one of the examples I was making. Had it been her father that done any of that, it would have been completely different reaction on every level. If he'd have done the exact same thing for the exact same reasons in the exact same place, he would be sitting in a prison right now. But for some reason, because this guy has a badge, he can get away with anything at all. And this really a lot comes from the zero tolerance policies that only seem to apply to black children or Hispanic children. They let the little white kids get away with a lot, but this minority of black children seem to be adversely affected by these zero tolerance policies. And these zero tolerance policies don't even only apply to the kids. The same thing is applying to the adults. It's one of the reasons why we have such a large amount of African Americans incarcerated in disparaging amounts, where you can go to a place like Vermont, where for every one white person in jail, there's 14 black people when they only make up 1.5% of the population. So the zero tolerance policies are the same policies that we saw in the 1800s with the black codes.
One of the things that I think both of you kind of hint upon, the Stockholm syndrome was brought up. Stockholm syndrome is when you identify with your oppressor to the point that you think that, you know, you take on their identity and you identify with them and you think that you're one of them. I think Patty Hearst, the kidnapped victim, I forget the name of the group that kidnapped her, but that is a famous story for historical context.
Manson family.
No, it wasn't the Manson family. Oh. It was a different family. It was like a liberation group. I can't recall the name of it. No, it wasn't the Manson's family. But I do want to point out, you know, that I have also seen people attacking the students that turned out in support of this police officer. One of the students said that he did view what was done to the his classmate as being excessive, but he didn't think it warranted Ben Fields being fired. And what I want people to also to understand that just as it's wrong to target the victims, the two victims in this case, I look at those other children who are on the other side of the issue as victims as well. Okay, these are children. They don't have all the facts. They don't have the big picture of police violence against children in this country. And oftentimes, as has been, I guess, suggested on this program, and of course we will try to get more information, but it also seems that these youth were manipulated by adults to do what they did. So I just want to tell people to slow their roll. Don't engage in the incorrect behavior that is on display in attacking the female assault victim as well as the female who stood up for her and verbally protested. Don't attack those children like that. Okay. But in terms of you adults out there, that is, you know, I know y'all, I know a lot of y'all need psychological help as well. But you need to just, you know, take a step back. The example was used is if Max had went up there and did his daughter like that, which I have heard other people use that same example. But what if the victim who was assaulted flipped over in her desk, all right, slung across the floor, slammed on the floor? What if that was your daughter? And let me share a comment from one of the listeners. They said that people who say that if their child was disrespectful or combative, that they would support that action are either lying or totally detached. If my child was treated this way, I would be in crazy mode. And I think that that is most parents' truth. That they may be saying that now cause it's a black child and they're racist or, you know, they may be saying that now, but I bet you, in almost every case, if it was their child, they would not be supporting this mess. And if they are supporting it, I'll take it further and say that we need to be looking at them if they have any children, cause who knows what kind of physical abuse they are committing against their own children. If they think everything was okie dokie, okay, with Officer Slam slamming, this female who was doing nothing more than engaging in nonviolent, protests at what she perceived to be mistreatment or unfair, to use her word, unfair treatment. Any comments?
I think that our children are not having their own constitutional rights respected. We know that the adults don't have their constitutional rights respected on a regular basis. And now, with the police's mentality of comply or die, mm-hmm. even applying to the schools, it has just gotten really out of hand. Now, American citizens, and in particularly the children, under these circumstances where our constitutional rights are violated, are expected to let it happen and then fight it in court. But that's not how it's supposed to go. You're not supposed to violate our constitutional rights. We shouldn't let it happen and then fight it in court, especially when we know the courts are biased towards the police. So this whole climate that's being created by the rhetoric being put out by police unions and police forces, it goes against everything that we stand for as a country.
Sister Ayana, I want to ask you a question from a professional standpoint, because I, like I said, I've been getting calls and voicemails about this, and somebody had called me, and I missed the call, so I called them back, and it was actually one of the listeners, and the brother asked me, he was calling from Connecticut, he asked me, he said, what would you have done? And I gave him my answer. I definitely wouldn't behaved in the same way that the adults in the room behave. But from a professional aspect and someone who has more knowledge on this than I would, how should the situation have been handled if, let's just say, a child is told to do something and they say, I'm not going to do it? At what point should school administrators, how should they have handled that in a professional manner?
Again, I just want to go back to the fact that this young lady clearly was in the custody of the state. And so with that being said, because this young lady does have human and social services involved, then I can bet 99% that this young lady had a 504 plan and she had an IEP, which is an individualized education plan, and a 504 plan deals with young people who may have emotional or behavioral trauma. So with that being said, the burden of responsibility lies in the teacher, as well as the administration, as well as whatever school guidance counselors were involved with this young lady, to know what her triggers are, what situations that may cause her to be emotionally uncomfortable or behaviorally unstable. So they should have already knew who was in the classroom and had a contingency plan if there was a behavioral issue. For some reason, if she didn't, there still needed to be more de-escalation, mediation. There's several different ways that this could have been handled prior to resorting to any kind of physical altercation. You know, I've seen it happen in situations where they cleared the classroom and dealt with that young lady. But to deal with her physically and violently not only was traumatic for that young lady, but it was also traumatic for all of the other young people in that room. And I'm absolutely sure that was done intentionally. That was done to send a message to the other young minorities and the other young students in that classroom of what would happen if they chose not to comply. So we see what's going on in our classrooms is the same thing that we're seeing with our adults. They're using fear and intimidation tactics and brute force to silence our people and to control our people into submission. And so this is something that if I was in the classroom from a professional perspective, I would definitely utilize these trainings and these skill sets that I have. But to be honest, I think all professionalism would have went out the window if I was in that classroom and saw him, because I don't think I would have had the wherewithal to stand by and allow that to happen without physically intervening. But that's just me.
Yeah, no, I was talking not about how you would handle the officer after he made such an egregious offense against the child, but when the child refused to leave the classroom. And I heard you earlier mention, you know, you've seen some instances, or you've heard of some instances where they would have cleared the classroom.
If it was a serious violation,
right.
But the fact of the matter is that young lady was sitting in her desk. She was quiet. She wasn't, you know, she wasn't the teacher could have easily moved forth and continued with their lesson, wrote her up, gave her an in-school suspension, gave her some kind of a written reprimand to be dealt with outside of the classroom. That was clearly a brute force of an abuse of control and an abuse of power, because a young lady sitting in silence in her desk, I don't see how that is truthfully impeding the other student's ability to learn or that teacher's ability to teach. And so for people to criminalize this young lady as if she was physically aggressive or verbally aggressive. Like I said, it just goes back to how deeply ingrained the Stockholm Syndrome is in our community, because I mean, if she was cursing the teacher out, if she was, you know, physically aggressive, or harm to the other students, to the teacher, or to herself, then maybe we can consider justification of that level of force. But I can't professionally or personally, for the life of me, understand and justify the actions of the administration or of the officer by any perspective. I just can't.
Now, this is what I told the caller, and I also had a conversation with my mother, who used to work in the school system. It's been decades, though, since she worked in the school system, but she gave me a similar response as to what you just gave. But I told him is that, you know, if I had been the administrator, you know, I would have asked the child, why don't you want to leave the class? Okay, and got her side of the story, and then perhaps it would have been discovered that she felt like she was being unfairly treated. At that point, I would have directed the teacher to continue on with class and have the student report to me after class and handled it that way. But I think you just laid it out to the bare bones of why they did what they did. It's all about sending a message and fear and intimidation, something that we see throughout our wider society when we're talking about non-white people. I want to take a station identification break, and then when we come back on the other side, I'll just want to share some turn the conversation towards Ben Fields, because it seems that he has a history of complaints of excessive force, including one involving a U.S. veteran. While no one can say definitively at this time if he uses steroids, but I did see an interview where he admitted to taking other supplements used by weightlifters. He has not, as far as I know, been tested for steroids, despite concerns that he may be using steroids, which from my research and other people who were asked to comment directly about his behavior, that steroid abuse, which can cause roid rage, is common among law enforcement officers. So I just want to turn it to focus on the terrorist known as Ben Fields when we come back on the other side. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, broadcasting every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday right here on the Black Talk Radio Network. I forgot to give out the studio line number. Again, if you are in the conference line, just hit 6 *6 1 if you have a question or comment. You can also hit us up on the studio line at 704-951-5030. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
They use force on inmates. They beat up inmates. They planted evidence or weapons in cells.
If an inmate was beaten up, presumably if he made a complaint, there had to be some sort of investigation.
It would be squashed at the management level. It wouldn't go any farther than that. It wouldn't go any farther than probably the supervisor of that yard.
Donald Boddicker is now in hiding. We had to agree his lawyer came to the interview and we couldn't say where we met them.
Ever since I broke the code of silence, I've lost everything. I've lost friends that I had associated with the Department of Corrections. I've lost some of my family members. I've lost everything. I lost my career. I lost financially. It was devastating. I'm on the move all the time.
Why?
Because I fear for my life, for my life, for my life, for my life.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, joining me today is one of our family members, Max Parthas. Again, he is the co-host, co-producer of New Abolitionist Radio, which airs every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time right here on the network. And we are also joined by Sister Ayana Asada from the Black Counselors for Justice Group. And again, we want to thank you both for
India Asada.
India. What am I saying? I got my daughter on my mind. I'm sorry. Yeah, been some family drama, and I just got my daughter on my mind. I'm sorry, Sister India. Okay. Now, Let me read a little bit from this article from countercurrentnews.com. I have linked to this article, but a law enforcement officer who is in the Beaver Creek Police Department in Ohio, for those that don't recall, one of those police officers, I can't remember the cop's name. It's just so many of these killers out here, so many of these victims, but the one that murdered John Crawford in Walmart for doing absolutely nothing but standing there while being black and talking on cell phone. But of course that was initiated by a false report by a white male who called 911 and lied on him. But there is they have developed a contact within the Beaver Creek Police Department, and they were asked about this particular case. Just let me read this. Says, by now you probably heard the theory that Deputy Ben Fields was on steroids, roid raging, when he attacked a teenage girl in her math class. Far from a polemic attack, Fields is well known for his history, for his heavy lifting at his local South Carolina gym. While no one is going to be able to confirm his steroid use, we did speak with some people who have given us insight into the deputy's probable abuse of regulated hormones. It was over a year ago that we were contacted by a member of law enforcement within the Beaver Creek Police Department in Ohio. Beaver Creek was where John Crawford had been gunned down just over a year ago. Amidst protests and marches demanding justice for John Crawford, a member of our journalism team put us in touch with a local contact who works within the department. They said the source also had something to say about steroid abuse in local Ohio departments. Everyone's on it, we were told. Everyone you see who seems a little too aggressive and is in good shape, they're using. We inquired about the source of the gear. Is this stolen out of the evidence locker or something? Their gear, what they're talking about is the steroids. It can be in some departments, they informed us, but here, if someone is using, they probably just buy from the same connections that everyone else does. But if we're talking about a detective or someone who can get away with it, it could be from the evidence locker. So we checked back in with them today with this source and asked about Deputy Fields. Do you think he was using? There's no question, our source commented. He exhibits all the signs of someone who not only juices, but probably uses way more than he needs to. So would you call him a steroid abuser, we asked. In my personal opinion, he displays all the signs of steroid abuse, was the answer we received. And again, you can read that article. I've linked it up on our program description for today. It is published on countercurrentnews.com, and it just reminded me, you know, because I actually did a Google search for that, because I have heard other people on social media mention possible steroid abuse. But then because of my work with Max and Johannin through New Abolitionist Radio, I recall several stories where we have reported or either shared on our Facebook page of steroid abuse being rampant in police departments across the country. I will take commentary from either one of you who wants to speak first. Did y'all have any comments on the issue of steroid abuse in law enforcement in general?
Sister India, you can take this.
I don't have any facts regarding officers using steroids, although I have heard accusations of such, but I do have some information that was just sent to me from one of my constituents as they're listening about some previous incidents with Officer Slam. Would you like to hear those?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Okay. In 2007, a motorist accused Richland County Deputy Ben Fields of excessive force when he was a rookie cop in Columbia, South Carolina. In a second case, expected to go to trial this upcoming January, Fields is one of 10 defendants answering a student charge that he was wrongly expelled from the high school where this Monday's altercation took place. Carlos Edward Martin sued Fields, another deputy from the Richland County Sheriff's Office. The sheriff was under Leon Lott in 2007, claiming that Fields attacked him after pulling him over, Martin said that Fields slammed him to the ground, kicked him, handcuffed him, and sprayed him with meat. Fields just snapped when Martin called him dude, according to the New York Daily News. However, a jury ruled in favor of Fields. So, unquote. So as we see, this is not the first instance of brutalization by this terrorist. And it appears that he may have been taken off the beat and put into the high school after excessive complaints of excessive force.
Well, I mean, that's just asinine if that could be substantiated that, oh, well, you might cost us too much money and from lawsuits because you out here in the streets brutalizing people. So we going to put you with some kids. Wow.
When I was down at the sheriff's department, I gave the information to Brother Jalal Abdul, who was one of the representatives there, I believe, for Black Lawyers for Justice, about the gentleman that she just described who was abused by this officer. And he was reaching out to the students so maybe that they could get together and form some kind of collective suit. So that was one of the things that I provided for them down there to mm-hmm. give the information to try to push this thing forward.
I think that all the different groups who are engaged in this much needed work and who are making demands on law enforcement agencies and even if you're addressing the prison issue or jails issue, I think there should be mandatory regular testing for steroid abuse, because it should be common knowledge to anybody who has done any in-depth research and reporting on these type of stories that steroid use among law enforcement is a huge problem. And it causes changes in behavior, moody, you know, being agitated easily. And that's why they call it roid rage. And so, I feel like, you know, if you're not going to randomly test these people for steroids, among other drugs, which I know they are not regularly submitted, because that's what the police unions do, is make sure that these guys are not, you know, scrutinized and whatnot. And but I think that if you attack someone or it's alleged, if there's an incident, I think that they should automatically be tested. Just like if I was working in a warehouse driving a forklift and I crashed into the wall, I'm going to be tested for alcohol use. I'm going to be tested for drug abuse. I think the same thing needs to be demanded in terms of these law enforcement officers. So I guess that will be the question that I will put to you, Sister India, is do you think that that's something we should be looking at, is the mandatory testing and monitoring of these law enforcement officers for steroid abuse?
Yes,
something else that we need to take into consideration. But I don't want us to get away from the fact that this is a young woman and this is a young Black woman.
and he's...
Uh-oh, I think we may have lost the sister, or... No, well, she's still there.
In a storm.
Yeah, she's still connected, but your audio dropped out. Sis, if you just hold on for us, we do have a caller who has a question. Caller, before I come to you, let me address this. I just registered the domain today, proxyracism.com, and I think that we need to consider that skin color, in my opinion, you know, is not an indicator that you will practice justice. Most of the prisons that I have visited have had a disproportionate number of black people working for them here in North Carolina. It's more black people working for the prison enslavers in the prisons I've visited than white people. We have seen cops, let's say Walter Scott, let's take it back to South Carolina, Walter Scott. Well, when that white cop, after he murdered Walter Scott and planted that taser on Walter Scott, well, that black cop was standing right there and filed a false report, totally backing up the white racist cop.
Same thing with Sandra Bland.
Same thing with Sandra Bland, most certainly. So, to me, because of proxy racism being such a huge problem and too many, you know, black people want them butter biscuits from Massa, I don't think that necessarily will address the problem. Let's go to the caller, area code 404. Thank you for being patient. Thank you for calling in, and go ahead with your question or comment.
Greetings to you, Scotty, and welcome back.
Greetings, Sarah. Good to be back.
Yes. Hello, Sarah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You too, Max. I hope you're staying dry and FEMA has indeed come through for you and the family.
Something like that. We've got the apartment now, and we're scheduled to move out. The beginning of December we'll be there, and it's a beautiful place. Really nice. I think we actually ended up getting a blessing in disguise, you know, how God works.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that at least y'all are staying nice and dry and getting comfortable once again. And the young lady, Miss India, I hope that she's able to get back in contact, Scotty. But since you were mentioning about the proxy races, don't forget Eric Garner, because there was a black female supervisor on duty when Eric Garner was choked out. So we have, as you said, we have gotten plenty of black officers, cops who have been standing around when these incidents have happened. And some or the other, we are supposed to give them a pass that they are scared or afraid for their lives and therefore that there is nothing that they can do. But a couple points that I wanted to touch on really quickly with you, Scotty, that you covered. I believe you were talking about Patty Hearst and the Symbolese Liberation Army.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. That's it. The Symbolese Liberation Army.
Yes, sir. But a couple things that really piqued my interest with this child. You know, we shouldn't call this, say, a young woman, because when we do that, we are taking away from her childhood. This is a child. This is a 16-year-old child who was brutalized and was overlooked and not treated as a child was, because this was one of the highest form of child abuse that took place in that school. First of all, I have some criticizing to do, and I know a lot of people saying that, you know, we shouldn't criticize it. The principal and vice principal of this school were they are black. The math teacher is a white male whose classroom she was in, and she did not turn in her cell phone as per the instructions for the class. And all students, when they enter the classes, were put deposit their phones in some collection receptacle. And once class is over, they get their phones back. Apparently, since she's new, she didn't get the memo, and she didn't do that. So, therefore, this white math teacher was the one to call on to the office. And as we saw in the video, I don't know if that was the black male in a white shirt, if that was the principal or the vice principal who was standing there when this child was assaulted, and he did not make a move. We cannot give these people a pass. We cannot give these people a pass, because not only did he stand wrong and he did not step in, and people always say, well, he could have been shot, he could have been killed. You know what? He should have said something. Because it shows me, because if that was his wife or his son being accosted like that, is he going to stand wrong and let this happen? And they're going to say, well, okay, I was afraid that I might get shot. You know, what kind of sorry excuses? You know, this is why black women and black men have these issues, because in time when some black men should step forward and at least assert their authority. We don't ask you to play Superman, but we're going to say, officer, this is not necessary. You know, first of all, when you came down to that classroom, the vice principal or principal came down to that classroom and saw what the situation was, he could have de-escalated that situation right then and there. And there was no need for this cop to come there and rough this child up like he like was done. The second point was these same two principals, this black male and black female, to show the level of disrespect that was accorded to them, they allowed these children to do a walkout demonstration.
Proxy racism. Proxy racism.
Exactly. So they are allowing these students to say, okay, if y'all get this, y'all can get 10 minutes, y'all can go there, y'all can protest, but as long as y'all get back in the classroom, we're not going to charge you with a crime, we're not going to put you in detention or suspension. So they allow these children that type of latitude. So you see, you know, we are always asking for black faces in high places, but at what cost? At what cost are we sacrificing ourselves on the altar in order to get these empty symbolic gesture of having black high school principals and vice principals, and they could pander to these children for this criminal who assaulted this child to allow them to demonstrate on his behalf, but then turn around and stood around and allowed this child to be assaulted? You see how they pander to these white people?
And then also, Sister Sarah, to suspend the other female student who did nothing mm-hmm. but what they should have done in lodging a protest, a verbal protest, and saying, stop that. That's not correct. I don't think you should be beating on that child like that or handling that child in that manner. And for them to say that she caused the disruption. And then I also read, and I could, you know, anybody that has different information can correct me, but she then told the other students, pull out your phone and record. Which is why I think that was a good move, because if they had not recorded, then guess what? Officer Slam would still be employed, I think.
I think she hit the nail on the head, and we've talked about this on New Abolitionist Radio when people were applauding all of the young black women that had just graduated from law school to become lawyers. I mean, what good is having people in positions of power if they're just going to practice white racist supremacy. I mean, and doctrines of white racist supremacy. We've got Christopher Epps out in Mississippi. And as we mentioned, the head of the prison bureau across the country is a black man. The president is black. The attorney general is black. And we're still being bombarded by these crimes against humanity. So, and research has shown us that black officers tend to be more violent against other blacks than their white counterparts, as if they've got something to prove in order to be a member of this clique.
Exactly, Max, because if you would recall, I don't know what's going on. Why am I echoing?
Give me just a second. I know what it is. Go ahead, Sister Sarah. Go ahead and continue.
Muted.
To tag on to what Max just mentioned, that young man in Savannah that was brutally tased in his groin and ended up dying in police custody, those were black sheriff deputies that were standing around and administered the punishment to that young man. I think it was Michael Achiba, I think it was the young man's last name. That happened earlier January of this year. So we can see that when these criminal activities happen, it's always these black people that are standing around, and we want to give them a pass while our loved ones is dying, and they want to show for massa that yes, sir, boss, you know, we got this under control. We could handle these Negroes when they get out of hand.
Mm-hmm. Unmuted.
Well, Sister Sarah, I'm right there with you. I do know it is often said among counter-racist circles that we shouldn't criticize other black people, but that I'm not one of those people. If anyone is engaged in incorrect behavior, they need correction. All right? I mean, even to
they need to be called, Scotty. We're not calling them out to say that we want something detrimental to happen to them. But criticism is needed to let people know your action is incorrect, especially when it's coming at the cost of these children's lives.
And your actions are supporting racism, white supremacy.
See, that's where my perspective comes different. And
muted.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Max. I don't mean to overtalk you. Please go ahead.
I was just saying that's where a perspective like mine becomes very different.
Unmuted.
See, a perspective like mine becomes very different in that case. People will say, if you don't like it, then become a part of the system. Become the principal. Become the teacher. Become the policeman and do something different. But from my perspective, the system itself is rotten to the core. Mm-hmm. There's enough people who are willing to forego their morals and be a part of it. I'm not one of them. I don't want to be a cop, and I don't want to be involved in a system that is oppressing my people until you change the system. Then I'd be willing to get involved in it.
You're correct, Max. One or two of us going in there is not going to change a system that was honed in on our oppression. Because these school resource officers, they only came into these schools in predominantly urban settings right around when the forced integration is when it ramped up. It started in the 70s. Because for one thing, you can see how these schools, this is an exact name for the prisons, from the school to prison pipeline. Because you go through metal detectors and bars to get into the school. The windows are barred up just like you find in a prison. As a matter of fact, some windows, you can't even open the window to get fresh air in these schools. You have to use pre-circulated air in these buildings. The schools are divided up into different blocks, just as you find in a prison. You look on the playground yard, out in the playground, there's no play area. It's all these metal bars, just as you find in a prison. So they design these schools to look like a prison so that when you have to walk in a straight line, you cannot walk down the middle of the road. You have to walk on the side. The teachers are the only one around to walk down the middle of the aisle, just as you see with the prison guards and the wards in prison. So this is the conditioning that it takes, because you can see the reaction of these students in the classroom. They didn't flinch. It was like they were conditioned for this type of reaction, that this man flipped this child over, or the student sitting behind her. She just sat there. She just didn't even budge. It's just like, you know, this is a normal sort of activity. Like, it was no big deal.
Well, from what I read, some of the comments of the students were that they were terrorized. And so when you're dealing with a situation where you are in fear, and of course we're talking about children, fear can do one of two things to an individual. Fear can cause you to freeze up. But the other thing that fear can cause you to do is to take action. All right. As we know, at least one of the female students in that classroom took action. She was afraid, but that fear did not paralyze her to where she did not take action and lodging a verbal protest against this brutalization of her classmate. The other students, and from what I've read, some of them said, was that they were terrorized.
There's a third thing that it causes, too. And
what's that?
South Carolina, in particular, is well known for that third thing. It will break your spirit of defiance, to the point where you will not want any trouble anymore. And that's what we deal with here in South Carolina. A lot of people that just don't want no trouble because they've been broken over years, generations and generations of this type of environment upon them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I wanted to kind of caveat off of what Max just said. It is very clear that the state of South Carolina and the white supremacist structure here has worked exceedingly hard to kind of instill that level of fear. But you have to understand where you are. You are in the home of the Stonewall Rebellion. You are in the home of Denmark Vesey and his rebellion. You see what happened a couple of months ago when this racist white supremacist devil went into a church and executed 9 parishioners while they were praying on the eve of Juneteenth. So this is a very strategic thing that happened, and that happened immediately after the murder of Walter Scott by a racist police officer. And so as that city began to fight back, immediately after, Clemente Pinckney was working on getting legislature going to get the police to be required to wear cameras on their bodies and fighting for other things to protect the liberty of the citizens of Charleston, which is, to my understanding, especially in North Charleston, 80% African American. So that lets you know whenever we get close to any bit of resistance or any bit of what they feel is going to be a revolution or political or physical resistance, they continue to strike in ways that will continue to silence. As I've been here working in South Carolina around all of these events that have been happening this year, the most interesting thing that I've heard, anyone that's in South Carolina, I'm sure they've heard this, they have a broadcast that is played on all the local radio stations, and it's very monotone, and it's made to specifically to program your subconscious. And it sounds a little something like this. Charleston, we are the holy city, Charleston. Let's show that God's work of love is the true justice. We are Charleston strong. Let's show the world how we can come together. So,
wow,
and this
man.
Comes on every 30 minutes.
What's
in
that movie?
Monotone. On every black station, it comes on at least every 30 minutes to an hour.
Wow.
And it's really quick, and it's really monotone. And they're very subtly programming the subconscious.
Wow.
And so Max is absolutely right that they work a lot harder on breaking that spirit of resistance, because the Gullah Geechee culture here in this state is so strong that they have to put these things in place to silence our people and to put fear and intimidation by our people. But the days of fear and intimidation are over, because as we saw on July 18th at the Columbia State House rally, there's a new generation of activists and blacktivists and revolutionaries that are not going to be silent, and that they're going to be that or else that Minister Farrakhan spoke about.
Yes, we inspired the country on that day, the world actually, July 18th, when we stood up against them. And, you know, that was another opportunity that they were using to try to break our spirits. After the death of 9 people and everybody was up in arms, they decided they're going to have all these racists come and stand at the Capitol and tell us how they want us dead. And they brag about killing our people and things like that. And normally, South Carolina would have put up with that, because it happens every freaking year. It's not the first time I've seen that happen. But this year, we got together as organization, black organizations across all spectrums, and we literally kicked their ass out of town.
Literally. He means that. Literally. Literally. Not metaphorically, but literally kicked some ass.
Literally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sister Sarah, before we move on, did you have any final comments?
Well, that was Sister.
Yes, sir. What I was going to say, to tie into everything that the young lady said, as well as Maxine yourself, stated, is not only that, the conditioning. This stuff started with these children from grade school, when these children were gradually introduced to this sort of discipline, where you must sit still, you cannot move. You have to lift your hands up, get permission to for everything, and if permission is denied, and like I said, this is the condition. This is just like that B.F. Skinner with the rats and with the dogs, how they train the dogs with that condition response. And that is the way how you see these children are respond. They look around to see if other people are reacting in order to gauge as to whether or not they should react. It's like if they don't have any, taken out from them, it's not only South Carolina, but in all of these schools where you see the school resource officer and this level of discipline have been put into these schools, punitive actions, where in-school suspension or alternative school, if you misbehave, they're going to take you out of your regular school and put you in some kind of alternative learning environment within which you can continue your education. Black people, we're going to have to make a choice if we want to continue with this education program, miseducation, going to these schools, even though we're paying with our taxes, or if we want to remove our children, because the way how things are going, it is not looking good for us. We're going to have to draw a line. We're going to have to say this forced integration assimilation was a failed experiment, and we have been the casualty victims of it. And it is time that we need to stop, and we need to seek an alternative solution for our children's education. We cannot keep submitting them to this brutality, as we saw with that young lady, a broken arm, bruises on her face, choked around, grabbed around her neck, and it doesn't fit well with me. And I do appreciate you, Scotty, Max, and Miss India, for you allowing me to have this opportunity to speak, and I'll go ahead and mute myself and let you continue with the dialogue. And I'm glad that you are back, Scotty, and I hope everything works for the best of since you had a time to recoup and regroup with your thoughts.
Thank you. Thank you, Sister Sarah.
You're welcome, sir.
Indeed. Thank you very much.
Okay, just to let y'all know, coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, Tando Radio Show will be on air. He will be talking about the killing fields of the pharmaceutical company. So make sure y'all keep it locked right here on Black Talk Radio Network's digital radio station. Again, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, Tando Radio Show. I want to get ready to close out the program, today's program, and I want to thank Sister Sarah for chiming in, and for those who also made comments that I shared online. Sister Indy, I was about to call you Ayana again. I got my daughter on my mind. I'm telling you, one of my daughters. But Sister India, did you have any final thoughts that you would like to share with the listeners? And please tell people how they can get in touch with you or your group so that they can network with you as we continue to build these lines of resistance.
Yes, my contact information is blackcounselorsforjustice, all one word, at gmail.com. My business line is 702-803-BCFJ. Again, that's 702-803-BCFJ, and that's blackcounselorsforjustice at gmail.com. And as far as a final thought, I just want to encourage people to continue this work all year around. Don't just come when the cameras are here. Don't just come when there's a crisis situation. Our children need us now. The sisters, we need you now. We need you to continue to stand up. And we need to continue to have these conversations and continue to have these meetings and build these coalitions all year round. But in closing, I just want to encourage everyone to participate in the blackout. You can find us on Facebook at National Blackout. And you can find us on our website at nationalblackout.org. This is very important because we understand history shows us that there's only two things that the white supremacy structure does respect, and that's violence and that's economics. And so if we're not ready to create any face-to-face physical resistance, then we definitely need to smack a cracker where it really matters, and that's in a pocket. So I'm encouraging everyone across the nation to participate in this national blackout and get a part of the organizing and get a hold of this boycott, start identifying black-owned businesses to patronize this season. And I want to thank you for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Sister India, and please stay safe behind these enemy lines. Brother Max?
Peace, Sister India. I'll certainly see you soon. It's been an honor to know you and to participate with you in these events over the past few months, and we've grown pretty close as a result. So thank you for being here today on such short notice. I would like to say make sure you tune in Wednesday at 8 p.m. here on the blacktalkradionetwork.com for New Abolitionist Radio. We'll be back after our week hiatus. Like Scotty, it's my first week off too, and since we started this program where I wasn't doing anything. And I'd also like to say that I'm not doing anything anybody else can't do. You know, I'm just a normal dude. That's it. I ain't got no special abilities, but I'm willing to go out and be seen and heard when these problems arise in my own community and nationally. So, you know, I take it upon myself to take action. Like Scotty said, actionists. Don't just talk about it. Put your body where your mouth is. Be there. Even if you're just a body in the crowd, it makes a difference. So that's all it takes to make a change in today's society. And also keep in mind that there's a root cause for all of these problems, a root cause that if we solve that problem, all the others will topple like dominoes falling in a long line. And that problem is modern day slavery and human trafficking. All of this exists around that. It all surrounds it, supports it, and enables it. And that's where they get their resources, their power, and their authority from. The constant threat of throwing you into a cage is the reason you do just about everything.
Thank you, Brother Max. And, of course, I'm looking forward to New Abolitionist Radio on Wednesday. As you stated, you know, we've been doing that program for over 3 years now, but last week was the first time that we ever, missed the program. But it came at a, a good time that we took that break because of what you and your family, yes, personally were dealing with, as well as our other host, Brother Dave. You know, had, making a big transition for his family. So it came at a good time that we took that break. And I definitely needed to recharge my batteries and do some self-reflection and introspection and whatnot. But it's been a pleasure, working with you all these years, and you stay safe down there, brother, behind these enemy lines.
I'll do my best, Scotty, but you know, no one is safe these days.
Exactly. That's why I said, do your best.
Mm-hmm. Peace, brother.
Peace. All right. I'm going to get ready to wrap it up as I get ready to also prepare to help produce Tando Radio Show coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Again, the topic for discussion is the pharmaceutical killing fields is what will be discussed. I think there's a documentary that he wants to share with you. Let me just make these final comments in terms of the in the news items. I appreciate Jamie Foxx and Quentin Tarantino speaking out against police terrorism. It has its value when you have showcased people in mainstream media who have a very high profile that when they speak up in the interest of justice. I'm not crowning Quentin Tarantino John Brown, and I'm not calling Jamie Foxx Nat Turner. All right, but it is worth something when high profile people speak out against police terrorism. And I'm not going to tell you to go to the movies because again, it's blackout. Quentin Tarantino has a movie coming out and the police unions are calling for a boycott of his film because he participated in this rally against police brutality in NYC. I'm only sharing that with you just to show you the childishness and the hypocrisy of these so-called people who are supposed to be paid to protect your rights, but here they are want to punish Tarantino because he exercised that right to call out these people for their murdering. And he did use the word murder. All right. So please check out that article if you want further information on that one. Presidential candidate again, Bernie Sanders has called for, the cannabis to be removed from the Controlled Substance Act. I don't see any logic in people, saying that they are against the legalization of weed. When that is such a major tool that they use to put people on the prison plantation, you don't have to smoke weed. And it's not that you're advocating that people use any type of substance, but you also don't have a right and other people don't have a right to deny people choices in those matters as long as they're not harming another individual. But we know that Richard Nixon said that they needed to find a way to target the blacks without targeting the blacks, without seeming like on the surface that they're targeting blacks. Well, we've had, 30-something years, 40-plus years of the drug war, and we see from the statistical data that how they have been targeting black people through the drug war. So that is a major move. It's something I expect to happen because President Obama has given signs that he was moving towards that direction after much pressure from us who are against the drug war. They just didn't wake up one day and say, this is wrong, and so we're going to take this action. No, it is because of people standing up and pushing back against injustice that the government takes any action. Like Frederick Douglass said, the power concedes nothing without a demand. And so now Bernie Sanders lending his voice to removing cannabis from the Controlled Substances Act. All right. And we certainly want to echo that. Although I want a total end to the drug war, I think that if a person is harming themselves through drug abuse, that person needs help. And I don't think slavery helps anyone. Okay. If you want to check out that story, please, check that out as well. And I will be back on air tomorrow with another guest. Tomorrow is Tuesday. So at 4:00 PM Eastern time, we will be joined for her first time on the program. But Dr. Frances Kress Welsing will be our guest tomorrow. Sister Cece, my assistant, reached out to her and let her know that I would like to speak to her about this black person, and not just this black person specifically, but when we are thanking the police for not killing us, when we're going to social media, and of course the white supremacists are going to make that sort of thing go viral. But you had this black man say, you know, that police are not targeting black people because he had on a hoodie and he was armed and the police didn't kill him. And so he's out there saying, like, this is evidence. And I'm paraphrasing what he said, but he's putting this out as evidence that people are lying about black people being targeted by police. And so we want Dr. Frances Kress Welsing to give us a psychoanalysis of that type of pathology. Again, you call it Stockholm syndrome. We can call it proxy racism. We can call it a very confused victim of the system of white supremacy. We can call it all these things, but what we should be trying to do is understand that behavior. And I think she would be a good person, to give us a psychoanalysis of that type of behavior on the behalf of victims of terrorism. All right. So, again, it has been good to be back on these airways, and I look forward to many more years of broadcasting here on Black Talk Radio Network. Check this out. It is a fact that we live behind enemy lines. It should be no debate or anyone disputing that there's a battlefield out there, because we see casualties being created every day. And so that you can decrease the likelihood that you will become a casualty, you need to develop codification. You need to develop battlefield awareness to help you survive these situations when you come across a terrorist like Ben Fields. With that said, peace and blessing to all.